On most school playgrounds across the country, a familiar scene unfolds. You'll find the same scene reenacted every day. The bell rings, and immediately comes charging out throngs of young people taking breaks from their midday lessons. Some of the kids, as you know, will go to the swings. Other kids will go to the slides. Some kids will go to the monkey bars. But in one corner of the playground, someplace where concrete meets grass, lies an asphalt jungle, dotted on the perimeter with basketball hoops, spotted on the ground with free throw lines and three-point arcs. And in the middle of that basketball court, inevitably come the recess hour, you'll find a cluster of young boys ready to play a game of basketball. Some of them, as you look at them, will be clearly built for the task. They are tall. They are lean. They are packed with as many minute muscles as an elementary frame can handle. They're ready to play. You'll notice some other boys. They aren't quite so blessed. They're a little shorter. They're a little squattier. You can tell that they're a little nervous. And they don't seem to be as worthy of the game. And then there are others in between. And on this familiar scene, a more familiar drama unfolds. Two of the young boys take a few steps away from the group, and they stand and face the crowd. They are clearly the captains of the teams. They have earned it with their reputation as being the better ball players. And one by one, they start selecting a boy for their team, plotting and scheming, doing last-minute scouting, trying to assemble what will be, at least for this recess hour, for them, the best basketball team in the universe. So naturally, the best young boys get picked first. They are the ones who are skilled, who have proven themselves on the court before. They are the ones who can dribble the ball without bouncing it off their foot. They are the ones who can run up and down the court without tripping over their laces. They are the ones who, within their lifetime, have actually made a real basketball shot. They are worthy of the early picks because of their past play. And then, as you know, we get to the terrible moments of the end of the picks. Because inevitably there is a young cluster of boys who are remaining to be picked. They are standing there, trembling with anxiety, racked with embarrassment, glum with despair. They wonder who in the world will ever pick us. They are not really worthy of the early picks in the boys' eyes. They have been an embarrassment before. But who's going to pick them? And inevitably somebody does. Simply because someone has to pick them. And someone has to have them on their team. And you feel, you always feel, for that last kid picked. You feel for that last kid picked because you have been that kid before. In other basketball dramas in your life, albeit in different settings, like in school, where you get a grade back on a test, and it's a bad grade on a test that you thought you did really well in. Or like in the office, where the boss comes to you and says that your work has been subpar, your work needs improvement, and he questions whether you're really right for the job. Or like in home, some of you have memories of hearing from your parents how disappointed they are in you because you have fallen short of their expectations and how rotten you feel inside. Or here's the worst setting of all, in the mirror. When you take a look at that person in the mirror and you say, "Darn it, you, why couldn't you do things better?" There is an evil. There is an evil that runs through our society and our time. And I want to call it external affirmation dependency. It is a dependency on external affirmation to determine your own worth. It is the evil that whispers in our ears in times of vulnerability and self-doubt that you are only worth what other people deem you to be worth. And that you are only worth You're only worthy depending on your actions and your deeds. That your value lies not in yourself, but what you do and how you act and how you perform. And we only receive acclaim and praise from others when we do a good job or when we do things the way they should be done. We learn it as kids. We have it reinforced as adults. When we get an A on the test or a promotion in our job or an I'm proud of you from our parents or forgiveness of ourselves, then we can feel good about ourselves. It is the lie that suggests to us that our work equals our worth. How many of you have ever caught yourself thinking or feeling the following statements? Let your memories fill in the blanks. If I could only do blank better, then other people will take more notice of me. I put in the most work, I did the best job, therefore I deserve the most blank. No one has given me a compliment for my work, therefore I must be a failure. If I want to prove that I'm better than someone else, all that I have to do is do a better job than them. I am nothing apart from my efforts. Most of us have felt the debilitating crush of these thoughts in our lives before. Let me share one of my own with you. If I preach a good sermon, then I must be a good pastor. We all feel similar thoughts. And we use them to evaluate our performance as kids, as parents, as co-workers, as employees, and, I dare say, as Christians. That's right. How many times have we knocked ourselves down because we don't feel like we're as faithful or as devoted or as well-versed in scriptures or as good a Christian as the person next to us? Because we're not as exemplary in our faith, and therefore we don't think that we're as worthy. Try to turn to the scriptures for help, and you might wind up in 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel has the story of God selecting Israel's first king. Israel had never had a king before, and they had been threatened by many foreign enemies. And when it came time for God to pick a king, who do you think God picked? Well, God picked the strongest one in the land. The tallest, the strongest, the one who was head and shoulders above the rest. It is someone whom you might think would be picked on many a basketball court. Someone that was worthy of that first pick of, to be Israel's king because of his externals, because of what he has done. His name was Saul. And you know the story about Saul, how he was incredible on the outside, but inside was spiritually corrupt. And so it came time for God to pick a second king, and God chose someone that no one was expecting. Out in the hills, a scrawny little kid who tended to some sheep, a kid who probably would have been picked last on many pickup basketball court games. His name was David, and he became Israel's greatest king. And in this story, Samuel the prophet says, humans look on the outside, but God looks in the heart. Hear once again the scripture lesson that we heard this morning. There you'll find a story about a wealthy landowner who had a great amount of land, a wonderful vineyard, but nobody to pick the grapes. And so the landowner did a very smart move. He went out to the unemployed, to the nearby marketplace, early in the morning, as soon as the sun came up, he handpicked a handful of people and said, come work for me. Come work for me in my vineyard and I will give you a good wage. And so they gathered together in this great vineyard and they started working. And it started to get hot and the sun became scorching, but they continued with their work, exhibiting extraordinary stamina and strength. Later on that morning, the vineyard went out at 9 o'clock in the morning and got some more help for these people. Got another batch, another crew to help out. And he did the same thing at noon. Another group to come in and help. And another group at 3 o'clock and a final group at 5 o'clock. an incredible crew of people, some of them working since dawn, others working until just before evening, working various times, working various lengths, but none of them working as long and as hard or being baked in the sun as long as that first group who was there since dawn. Now, who do you think among all those groups deserved the most praise? Who do you think deserved the most acclamation from the landowner? Who do you think of all those groups was the most valuable group to the landowner? The group that had been there since morning, or the group that had been working just for an hour or two? That's the question that Jesus asks us implicitly through the passage this morning. If we depend on our sense of external affirmation to answer the question, then we say, well, of course, the ones who were most important to the vineyard owner were the ones who had been working the longest, the ones who had shown themselves to be worthy, the ones who had proven through their work to be worthy of the most praise. But is that how the story ends? The story ends with the landowner giving equal amounts of praise, equal amounts of pay to every single group who had worked regardless of how long they worked. Incredible. The message that the landowner is sending to the people, despite their grumbling and despite their complaining, is, each of you were unemployed before I found you. Now, each of you can take care of your families because of my generosity. None of you, the landowner would say, deserves to determine your own worth. I determine your worth. And I say that you're all worthy, equal. Now here's the kicker. You knew this was coming. You knew this was going to be the sermon. The kicker is, that's the way God sees us. That's the way God looks at us. We don't get to determine our worth, and others don't either. Did you hear that? I'll repeat it. We don't get to determine our worth, and others don't either. Why? It's because God is the one who gets to do it. God is the one who is generous. And in God's eyes, nothing we do, none of our actions, deeds, thoughts, or feelings can ever make us deserve grace anymore. And in God's eyes, nothing we do, none of our actions, deeds, thoughts, or feelings will make us look, will make God look at us any less. You are worthy. You are worthy, not because of what others might say to you, good or bad, and not because of the way you might look at yourself, but because God has shown great grace and compassion and has proven you to be worthy. Because God says so. How countercultural this is. The glamour magazines like to tell us who is pretty and who is handsome. The political newscasts like to tell us who is famous and who is powerful. The schools even like to tell us which ones of us are smart and which ones of us are successful and which ones of us are failures. And I would have to say that many of our churches are filled with ideas of which ones of us are the most faithful, which ones of us are the most giving, which ones of us are the most devoted. All the while, that evil little whisper is telling us that we are nothing apart from our actions. But God is here to whisper in that same ear with a sweet, sweet spirit that you are worthy. You have been given grace because God says so, regardless of what others think of you and regardless of what you think of yourself. That, brothers and sisters, is called grace. That's what is available for each one of you, regardless of where you are in your Christian journey. Some of you have never experienced that grace before. This morning there is an invitation for you to experience the reconciliation, the transformation that can happen in your life when you accept the work of Jesus Christ in your life as an act of grace that deems you worthy of being in God's fold. Perhaps You have yet to start that journey. You have that opportunity today. Others of you might be further along in your Christian journey, yet you still need to hear the same message. How you are worthy in God's eyes, and that none of your actions are reflected in the way that God sees you or the way that you should see yourself. There is no need for you to try to be super Christian with an S on your chest in order to deserve God's grace anymore. That's not possible. God can't love you any less or any more. So stop trying to earn what you've already been given, a sense of worth and value in your life. The kingdom of heaven is like a playground basketball game. Assembled on it are a motley bunch of kids, you and me. We come in various abilities and achievements, glories, crowns, deficiencies, and weaknesses. We are a varied group. Oftentimes we try to one-up each other. We gripe against each other. We try to get the attention of God so that we might be worthy of the first pick. But the kingdom of heaven is like that moment when God looks at all of us and says, I pick all of you. Come be on my team. Will you all come play? In the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of us all. Amen.